This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharit Abdullah and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Joining me today is Dato' Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. Brahim's Holdings Berhad has been responsible for preparing the in-flight catering for the Malaysian Airlines since 2003 after taking over the MAS catering. After 10 years, the company turned around the losses it has undertaken from MAS catering. However, in 2014, tragedy struck the Malaysian Airlines when it lost two of its planes that year, and it has been an uphill battle ever since for Brahim's. Last year, the company was placed under the PN17 status by the Kuala Lumpur Stock Exchange. Dato' Sri Ibrahim will speak to us today on how they plan to recover from this downturn. So, Dato' Sri, thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you, sir.
Back in 2002, 2003, you took on the 70% stake in MAS Catering and paid $170 million, including its accumulated debt, worth about $240
million. Yes.
10 years it took you to turn it around. And what was the opportunity that you saw that made you take on this challenge in the first place?
Thank you, sir. Well, basically, we are involved in food. The whole group is involved in food, catering, manufacturing, and all that. And there was this opportunity that came in, and somebody told me that the flat kitchen not that run properly. And then the thinking is that, the thinking of the government of the day is that let Malaysian Airlines carry on flying the planes. We are very good at it. Mm. And food, let somebody else who knows about food to carry on to do that. So I went to see the government of the day that time, and then we had some discussions and so on. And I said, yes, I think that's something we would like to get involved in. And so after a decision was made, and then MAS felt that they should retain 30% instead of selling 100%. So in principle, I agreed, yes, we want to go ahead and do this. But then it took about 8-9 months of negotiation before we can finalize the terms. So at the end of the 7-8 months, then we heard that we have to pay about $175 million to take over. And I was thinking and consulting my friends in business and bankers and so on. We have to raise cash, $175 million, to pay for 70% of MAS catering. And we have to take over $240 million accumulated losses because they are making losses about $40 to $45 million every year. So I accumulated $240 million. So my exposure is $400 over million. You think this is a business I should go into? So one of my friends from Penang was saying, "Angila, what are you trying to do?"
And you were an academic yourself before that, researcher. Teaching, you weren't a businessman.
I was teaching for 6 years at University of Putania at that time. Si Putra now.
Yeah.
But anyway, what we did along the way was we negotiated. We spoke to some of those people who are involved in flight catering, international flight catering. At that time, we approached Emirates. But Emirates told us that they are not willing to take a big stake, maybe 30-35%. So I was thinking that I will have to raise the other 65%. It would be too much for me. We approached LSG. Because LSG, actually at that time, they are the biggest operator of flight kitchens. All over the world, they got 200 kitchens.
Yeah.
All over the world, the biggest operator. So we approached them. They said, yes, we are interested. Even if you have to take the entire stake, we want it. okay. So I'll have the major stake, then LSG will come in. And we discussed with them. So when these numbers came in, I was wondering, because advice, good advice, that don't do it. You're, you know, throwing good money, and you are basically bailing out a government company.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that? So
what was the problem with MAS catering service? What was the specific issue that they went through? What is it? What were the inefficiencies?
Well, when we came in, then we found out some of the problems. So actually, there's a lot of wastages. A lot of wastages. When we came in the first year, we looked around and tried to put things right. The second year, we cut down a lot of the wastages and we managed to make an operating profit. Second year onwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you yourself. I mean, you spoke about inefficiencies. Prior to that, I mean, your experience, you, like you said, 6 years as an academic as well as a researcher as well. So before that, did you have any form of in-flight catering experience prior to taking up this job with MES?
Basically, in-flight catering experience, I do not have any experience in flight catering, but the elements of in-flight catering I've been doing with my industrial catering and my food manufacturing, the elements of it inside, but not flight catering per se, because flight catering is different in the sense that you need a big number of people, and the preparation of the meals on is the same as chilled meal, frozen meals,
yeah.
But then the tray setting is what the most laborious part of airline catering. That's why we need 1,300 workers to actually to produce all the meals, 50,000 meals a day, that kind of thing.
So you had a solution to fix the inefficiency that mass catering had. That was all it took for you to make the decision to go ahead and take on these losses that they had.
I saw that opportunity.
Right.
I saw that opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah. But before that, because we did not have all the details at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So part of the contract, so you were offered 25 years, which is supposed to be due in 2028. How did you manage to land this very lengthy contract? Because it's quite unheard of. In some ways, some are given 10 years. You're given 25 years. How did that happen?
Yeah. So there has been a lot of misperception or misconception about it. The truth of the story is this. The figure arrived at for Malaysian Airlines, for MAS to sell over the catering arm, is about 175 million.
Mm.
And that was where I consulted some of my friends in banking and finance people. And they were the ones telling me that, you know, 175 million and you have to take over 240 million of accumulated losses. Your exposure is 400 million. Do you want to do this? You're basically bailing out a government company.
Mm.
So that was, well, after I agreed to do it, that was after the negotiation discussion and so on, we arrived at that number. And frankly, I nearly walked out.
Mm.
But then the partner that we have spoken to, LSG SkyChef, was the biggest airline caterer at that time. We had 200 kitchens all over the world, 200 kitchens. So the director who accompanied me was saying that, you know, Dato, you carry on. You ask for a long-term contract to cover your 175 million that you put up front. And then you can do it. He said, this is nothing new. He said, we have done this in Korea where we have a 30-year contract. So it's nothing new.
Right.
So I thought, why not? So, okay, I'll be doing national service, but then I won't be losing money.
Okay.
So I decided, okay, we'll go ahead. And then that's why we came in. We formed a joint venture with LSG SkyChef. Brahim called Brahim's LSG SkyChef. So we undertook this.
Were you the only contender back then? I mean, was it through direct negotiation or was there like a tender process? Yeah. So were there other people who were interested in taking over this mass catering as well?
I heard there was another party that was also interested. But somehow or other, they did not come into the picture. I think probably when they heard about how much they had to pay, you know, most people would say no. But I've got the best partner in the world in airline catering, and they are confident. So yes, we can do it. We can turn it around. So they give me confidence. So never mind, money up front, but earn it over 25 years.
Okay. So you spoke that there's another person interested, but I think words that has been going around on the street as well, that it's perhaps, could it be that there was an instrumental figure that sort of helped you to get the contract? For an example, you are the brother of the former Prime Minister Abdullah Badawi.
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, sometimes, you know, this what you call guilt by association, like that happens.
Okay.
See, what happened was, at that time, I don't mean to drop names, but anyway, the fact of the matter is that at that time, Tun Mahathir was the Prime Minister at that time. He was my old boss when I was in FEMA for 6 years.
He handpicked you, didn't he? As a researcher at FEMA.
Actually, in FEMA, I was headhunted.
Yeah.
Then went in, the directors, that time, Eric Chia, Lorin Osman, those are the old tycos that interviewed me. And then they said, boss wants to see you. We have made an appointment for you to go and see him. So I went to see Dr. Mahathir at that time, the Deputy Prime Minister, and had nearly a one-hour talk with him.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the talking was done by him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his expectations and so on. And I made one promise that I kept. He said, don't make use of this as a stepping stone. You stay 2 years, 3 years, you quit, you could join another company and then move on again. And stay at least for 5 years.
Okay.
So I stayed for 5.5 years.
Okay. All right.
And so I quit not because I went to join another company. I started my own business as an entrepreneur. And I invited him to come and open my factory.
Yeah. And that was your sort of meal ready to eat.
Yes,
food, wasn't it?
That was a new process at that time.
Okay. So just now you mentioned that, you know, it took you 10 years to turn around the company. Up to 2013. And then, unfortunately, in 2014, tragedy struck our country. So that was a sad moment for all of us. So Malaysia Airlines remains as an important contract partner for you. So as a result of that, tell us about how the MAS Act and other, you know, financial concessions that you were asked to give, which has affected your bottom line as a result of this.
Well, basically, we are doing quite well, turning around the company, making very good profits, and the best, like I said, about 80 million EBITDA. But this unfortunate incident. And then, so what happens was, people from China, I wouldn't say stopped coming in, but most of them stopped coming in. So this was affecting MAS business. And even before that, the MAS was also having problems making payment. So end of the year, they have got something like 125 million accumulated utang, basically,
yes.
Not paying us for the services. And then when the MAS Act came in, so a few things happened. We had to write off 74 million in our receivables. And then there's a 30% reduction of prices across the board.
Okay. Did you agree to all this?
Ultimately, I had to agree because we had no choice. Because the business is there. And then, you know, for me to buy out, because we had a discussion, among our shareholders to agree or not to agree. And we consulted some people. So even lawyers, this being very frank, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking, why did you
against
challenge
anybody?
This?
Yeah. So we consulted people also. And then this business, I mean, he has got the potential. And then when we consulted some lawyers and so on, maybe we need to take some legal action because we lost 74 million and 30% of the value of the contract is cut. And then contract shortened by 5 years without compensation and all that.
With a possible extension at most by 2025.
Yeah,
which so is, we're 3 years short,
25.
Right?
Yeah. Because it's after 10 years, we've got time. By right, we've got 15 more years.
Short change in some ways.
Yes, basically, and with no compensation. I was thinking, even people in highways and all that, when it's shortened, I mean, they got the compensation, but we did not get any. And then when we consulted the lawyer, they were saying that, look, the MAS Act was instituted by Parliament because of that, to protect the national airlines against litigation and all that. And here, you want to sue the company, you can't do that.
Mm.
So we just said, okay, do you want to carry on with the business?
So do you?
A lot of the directors were saying that, you know, you can quit now if you want to. Nobody is going to say anything. But I thought that I'm going to take this challenge. I think I can still still have to turn around. I've got this passion for food. Anything that I do, I want to see it through. And then he said, yes, we had to sign this contract.
Mm.
Or else, you know, we have to give up everything. So we spoke with some director. I was saying, no, why don't we just go ahead, sign it, and handle this disadvantage or that another day. Hopefully we can. Because we have got other airlines. We've got 30 over other airlines, the foreign airlines. And these are the top airlines that we are servicing, including airlines like at that time, Qatar was number one. And then we've got Emirates, and then we got the British Airways and so on. The top 10 companies, airline companies, are our customers.
So those are all the non-Malaysian airlines customers.
Non-Malaysian airlines.
But, I mean, did you harbour any hope that Malaysia Airlines would turn around and eventually would sort of reward you for your loyalty?
I was hoping that would happen, or at least to get the government to realise that I sacrifice a lot.
Okay.
To do that.
All right. So joining us on The Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato' Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. We will be right back with more insights on how Brahim plans to position its business in this changing aviation landscape right here on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
You've tuned in to BFM 89.9 on The Breakfast Grill. This morning is Dato' Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. So earlier we spoke about what has happened to Malaysian Airlines and your association with the airlines and how you've been loyal throughout the thick and thin during the time. But let's talk about your company today as a result. So your company has been placed under the PN17 status at the end of last year.
Yes, unfortunately.
Do you have any status update with regards to your regularization plan?
Well, we are in the process now of regularizing, and we did make a report to say that it's going to be through self-regularization. So basically, we are not going to sell it or close down. And we have got a few offers for our RTO. So we decided, no, we still want to continue with the business. You see, what happens, the fact that we are in PN17, what happens actually is that when we paid such a high price for a losing business, in 2003, we built up a very high level of goodwill, 400 million over worth of goodwill for the high price that we paid.
Okay.
And over the years, we had to write off, and so on. And then what happens is that last year, we had to write off 88 million ringgit of goodwill.
Mm.
And we found ourselves, because minus 88 million, we're down to the below the threshold of 25% level of, And then if you're below 25%, you find you're in PN17.
Your share price at its peak was about 270. And it fell now below 50 cents.
Now it's about 12 cents.
12 cents, even so, yeah.
The high was 270, and then when we lost money, 35 million, it went down to 50 cents immediately.
Right. And, has there been any offer that's come in to sort of help the company out of this rut, really?
Well, there are quite a number of offers coming in, want to take over the company and work together and so on. We are still looking at it. And now there's an opportunity in terms of, no doubt we are in PN17, but there are a few interested parties. I've narrowed down to two now, and probably we will finalize with one. I cannot say too much now because we are making monthly reports to Bursa, and also to the banks and so on. And so we'll be appointing soon some accountants to oversee and so on.
When do you expect all this to be resolved? Is it before the end of the year?
Well, we have until February next year to actually put in a regularization plan. But we intend to do it within the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Because we already got people who want to come in.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to make the decision and then make the announcement.
Dato, you mentioned about the goodwill impairment and so forth. Help us clarify the situation for us, not looking at your annual report and your performance. The number of meals that you cater, for example, in 2013 is just at about 17 million. And by 2017, your volume rose about 18.6 million meals that has been served. So you claim that your business was affected as a reduced number of flights by Malaysian Airlines as a result of their restructuring exercise. Looking at this, the math doesn't quite add up. Could you explain this justification?
You see, quite a lot of people have asked me before. You control, you see, basically, we have 85% of the business at the KLIA. So airlines that come in, we have 85% of those people are actually our customers. So people often ask me, you have 85% of the business, and yet you don't make that much money. Why? Exactly.
Okay.
So the thing is that because one of the major thing is that the mass act actually where we have a 30% discount across the board, we are hardly making any profits.
Mm.
And mass is, of course, 50% of the business.
Okay.
And then we lost some other destinations also.
Mm.
But the thing is that with the FOCA, the foreign airlines, so that helps actually to keep us afloat.
So, I mean, if we just want to look at how you price your products. So you claim that right now the FOCA, they are paying five times more than what MAS is paying right now, three to five times.
I'm not saying that all.
Not all, FOCA. So within the range all the 33 or 35 airlines, they're paying about three to five, two to three, and some as high as five. Depending on their request, I'm sure. So, where did Malaysian Airlines fall back then in 2013?
No, actually, if you have to look back to 2013, they were at international pricing.
So that means we're talking about the five times or three
times. Yeah, but
if we were to use the current price as
the five time is
benchmark point.
The five time actually benchmark against what MAS is paying.
So, I mean, basically my understanding is that the profit margin that you're making out of MES right now is very poor. So, I mean, if we look at into, again, your annual report, I mean, you recorded two losses in 2016, 2018 worth over 100 million. All this as a result of your administrative costs. On the other hand, this you attributed to lower air passenger volume as well as from your major customers of the group. On the other hand, you claim that Malaysia Airlines is not allocating enough funds for the in-flight catering for you to serve quality food. So you were referring to, the, you know, the people were complaining about the quality of food in Malaysian Airlines, right? So they're complaining that the quality is not up to par. And you're asking, saying that if you want it to be up to par, you need to allocate more funds. So in that sense, are you still making profit with the current food that you're serving in Malaysian Airlines today?
Well, Malaysian Airlines today, I mean, it's difficult to answer the question. I think we are, but we are barely breaking even as far as MAS is concerned. You see, we have a contract that we signed after the MAS Act and things were reorganized and so on. So the contract that we signed tied us down to a pricing for the meal served. And we have to still follow those pricing signed 5 years ago. Price of raw material have shot up so much.
Yeah.
So question, how do we make money on that? Whereas you look at on the other side, the foreign airlines. Foreign airlines, we got 2 year contract, some 3 years, some 5 years, and some even 10 years.
Yeah.
So these people, they of course they will buy food from other airports, other flight caterers all over the world, and they know what the international pricing is like.
Yeah.
So they accept the prices that we have quoted and negotiated a bit and all that. But generally, it's quite acceptable.
Again, it sounds like you've been shortchanged, you know, when it comes to after 2016 with the whole Malaysian, you know, with the new contract that has come in.
You know what happened? Some people, they are food people. I was at the Faculty of Food for 6 years, and people were telling me, Brian, what kind of crap are you serving on Malaysian Airlines? So I said, my God, how am I going to answer this? So,
but how does, I mean, you engage your shareholders, I'm sure. So how do they respond to you getting into this contract with your Malaysian Airlines?
Well, that contract was signed 5 years ago. It's still being carried on. But next year, we will negotiate a new contract. And hopefully, I don't know, there could be some changes by that time.
All right.
Then we will look at the...
All right. And you turned it around the first time. And this time around, you know, the business environment is different. There's a lot of uncertain issues that is plaguing Malaysian Airlines that has yet to be resolved. There's fierce competition, volatile oil prices. Whatever the outcome is going to be, like you said, you still harbor the hope for them to turn around their business. It will still not be the same as the pre-2014 era. I mean, it was very different.
Not,
the situation has changed. How do you plan to transform your business to sort of accommodate this new business environment?
Well, actually, the kitchen that we have, we are doing now about 50,000 meals a day. And we've gone up to 62,000 meals a day. And so we still have capacity. And the question is, we have to divert some of those meals, build up a business that is non-airline related, and we can build that without depending on the airlines ordering and so on. So I thought there'll be the non-airline business is something that we seriously need to look into.
So you're starting to explore.
Making use capacity,
you're starting to explore other avenues. I mean, but now considering your financial situation now, do you think that? I mean, you think it's a move a little too late?
Well, we really
a bit reactionary, I guess. My question would be,
well, we should have looked at that earlier. But the thing is that, during the good times, we enjoyed the profit we're making. But when we hit this big hurdle, this roadblock, then to find out how do we actually address the situation. And one of the things is actually because BHB is a holding company,
yes,
and it's got other businesses. And then the other business we have is the one of those is the airport operation, F&B at the airport. We are actually the biggest operator of food and beverage at the airport. We have at Kerai 1, Kerai 2.
How about AirAsia, though? I mean, they are your clients as well. Were they not able to sort of fill the void that MAS left behind?
Well, AirAsia acts as our customer, and they still are.
Yeah.
And we are hoping that we can get more volume from them. But AirAsia buys food from other local caterers also.
Yeah.
So we're trying to convince them. They give us a package deal. we supply all to you. That was, yeah.
All right, Dato Sri. And in the meantime, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. And joining us this morning is Dato Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. We'll be back with more on Brahim's role in the global halal industry after the 8:30 news. So stay with us on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you've tuned into The Breakfast Grill, and joining us this morning is Dato Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. Okay, Dato, so I mean, you are quite, you know, you're a prominent player within the halal food industry market.
Yes.
So the global halal market is expected to reach about 749 billion by 2025. Mm-hmm. So you have Brahim Foods, a meals ready to eat product under your
The Winner
which is food, a private company that you look over as well. And it's sold in many countries. How much is this product contributing towards, you know, your overall business?
Well, there's the public side, which is BHB. Basically, we're contributing also to the growth of halal. Our flat kitchen actually has got a halal excellence center, Brahim's Halal Excellence Center, which actually certifies about 17 flat kitchens overseas, all over the world, except South America. And our certification of halal is recognized by the airline industry. And so quite a number of those airlines, because as you can imagine, there are quite a number of airlines now owned by Muslim-owned airlines, like Qatar, Emirates, and so on. So when they go other stations, they will want to have halal meals.
Yeah.
So the certification is quite important. And it's also the family company and Dubina. That's 100% ours. And under that, we have got Dubina Food Industries, which is manufacturing, Dubina Trading, Dubina Consult. And we have got also the military catering, etc.
I was from a military school, by the way. I tasted your food even back in the day. I appreciate it when I was in the jungle.
So you would have tried the military rations that we
prepared. Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah, the very hard biscuit as well.
You see, the thing is that previously, military ration was more from tin cans.
Mm.
See, the process that we have, the retort part, actually it was invented by U.S. Army R&D for military use and space program.
Right.
So when I brought over the process that time, when we started, we were the third in the world. And after Japan, my access technology is through Japan. And we are trying to develop the local market, and then also the market that actually it was developed for, the military.
Mm.
At that time, there were a number of peacekeeping forces all over the world under the auspices of United Nations.
Mm.
And peacekeeping forces, many of them are Indonesians, Pakistanis, or Muslims. And then when the U.S. was supplying them this ration, the MRE, they would say that this is not halal, they don't want to eat.
Mm.
So they looked around, sourcing, and they found that we are the only MRE halal MRE supplier in the world.
I mean, it's interesting to divert a bit from the subject. But again, I mean, if in the grand scheme of things, I mean, how much is this, you know, your MRE contributing towards your overall business?
It could be much better, but MRE is contributing maybe currently is maybe about 20% or so, 20-25%. The catering is doing much more.
Okay. So now that in-flight meals have proven that it's a tough market to tackle, especially with the changing environment, what ambitions do you have for your MRE products?
MRE product, you see, what we intend to do is we are actively going on export drive. We have got approval into Australia, all the 43 products, including the meat products. And we have got approval also into Japan. It took us 8-9 months to get the approval. Very tough. These two countries, Australia and Japan, is very difficult to get into. And we got, alhamdulillah, we got into Japan. And we have started Brahim's Food Japan and for distribution of this our products. And we also have opened 3 restaurants in Japan. You're welcome when you go to Tokyo. We've got one on Shibuya and we've got one in Yokohama, another one near Tokyo Station.
Okay.
So I'm looking to maybe form a chain if I can get the right partner in Japan.
Okay. You've been in the food market since, I mean, MRE has been in the market since in the 80s.
Yeah.
In my personal, at least my personal experience, your product serves, you know, if it serves me correctly, your target market remains to be Malaysians who are either traveling or Malaysians living abroad.
Mm.
So do you have any idea as to how to expand your customers beyond Malaysians?
Actually, we have started actually quite some time back to promote. You see, the first time when we started the factory, the first few products were exported. My first 3 containers was to Saudi Arabia.
But when you say they are exported, a lot of them are probably consumed by Malaysians who are living in those countries itself. Do you think that you know, other nationalities or those who are non-Malaysians, would they buy your products?
Well, I think they are. So the thing is that our cooking sauces are being sold on Amazon, and then besides locally. And US now, actually, I mean, overseas now, they're looking at the new, novel cuisine, new cuisine, and Asian meals and so on. And what we have, the cooking sauces, is proving to be very popular in the sense that you can have your... maybe chicken curry or chicken korma overseas, just put in the meat, put in our cooking sauce and stir. And that's the one that's a lot of growth in. And we're hoping to develop further the cooking sauces, especially.
So do you think that partly, I mean, I'm just thinking a lot, looking at the list of menus that you have, you have variety from nasi goreng kampung and so forth, even now nasi lemak. And do you think that it's because it's too ethnocentric, meaning too Malaysian-centric, that perhaps people who are not from Malaysia don't understand and are afraid to try your product?
Yeah, so that actually could limit the number of people interested. But I'll just take Japan, for example. Japan, we have a restaurant, we have got the products also, and we find 65% of customers actually are Japanese. And then because those who travel to Malaysia and to Asia, they are very familiar and they visit the restaurants. And then we also sell the products down there. We tell them, look, this is what you could get. Also, I mean, you can stay in Japan and still eat your nasi lemak besides coming to the shop and so on. And a few places in Kyoto and Yokohama, some places, I see that the sales are building up. Okay. So the restaurant probably has got something to do with it also. They go to the restaurant, those who haven't been to this part of the world, they like the product, they buy it, and they keep on buying. But we need to actually build up. Towards 2020 Olympics, there is a big demand for halal meals. And they estimate about 28% of
athletes
will be Muslims and so on. Well, they wanted us actually to open a central kitchen for the Tokyo Olympics, but I think that could be a heavy investment, and we have to look beyond 2020 to Olympics if we were to open a kitchen down there.
Okay, so we're running out of time. So I have one last question before we end our interview. Now you speak about doing business in Japan, and at the same time, you're currently holding several international roles, like, for example, Deputy President of One Belt One Road Association of Malaysia, Committee member of Malaysia Japan Economic Association, yes, as well as member of Malaysia Saudi Business Council.
Yes.
What is your mission here?
Well, basically, this would be to actually promote Malaysian businesses.
Okay.
And then also, for me personally, for a group of companies to look at opportunities in all these countries, meet up with them when delegation come down here and have discussion to see where their interests lie. We've got quite a number of delegations coming in. Yes, and then there'll be conferences going on. Yesterday, we just had this one conference, Belt and Road, and the big number of participants, and of course, a big number is also from China.
Yep.
And China, I think we're going to get a lot of investments coming in. There's a lot of interest. Minister of Finance there gave a keynote address yesterday. And more than half of the participants are from China. Then the rest, of course, are local. Of course, the local people participate also are looking at building up businesses, joint ventures, and also trying to interest these Chinese business people to actually invest in Malaysia. And many of them seem to be quite interested to talk about it. And
you seem more proactive this time around.
Yes.
We live and learn that. Dato', it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for speaking to us on The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Dato' Sri Ibrahim bin Haji Ahmad, the chairman of Brahim's Holdings Berhad. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Syarits Abdullah for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.